Hello, everyone. This is Big Reed with another episode of Gaming's Lost Memories. This is episode 34. Probably don't need to number them anymore, but it's just habit. But today we're going to be talking about Metroid Prime 4 on the Nintendo Switch and Nintendo Switch 2. So, a little bit of a prelude here. I have played and completed the game on the Nintendo Switch 2. The Switch 2 has been my main console basically since it came out. Absolutely loved and adored the Switch 1. Had a OLED Switch kind of at the end of the Switch's life cycle there and transitioned into the Switch 2. I would love to have my OLED screen back on my Switch 2, but that thing was already like $500. So, you know, hopefully in a couple of years when they get the costs down for manufacturing and everything like that, they can bring that back, because I will say, just as a side note, the OLED screen on the Switch 1 was incredible, but everything about the Switch 2 I like. My fingers are crossed that there's enough power in there to continue bringing third parties to Nintendo systems, and even do a lot of updates on the existing third parties that came over that just don't run that well on the Switch 1. It would be really nice to see a Switch 2 enhancement for a lot of those games. They've already been kind of doing that. And Metroid Prime 4 Beyond is one of those games where there's two versions of it. Now, I can only talk about my experience on the Nintendo Switch 2. However, gotten a lot of feedback that apparently the game runs really well on the Switch 1, which is very surprising to me. All of my gameplay that I did with it was strictly in handheld mode. I bring this up on like every podcast, but I feel like the older you get, the more, like, not responsibilities, because everybody has responsibilities, so that's not fair to say, but, you know, when you have a lot of things that you have to do, and there's a lot less time to sit down in a gaming chair that I'm sitting in now and look at this beautiful Omen monitor that I have. But to sit down for an extended period of time, my favorite thing about the Switch 2 is literally that I can put it in sleep mode at any point, or just play for 5 minutes, you know, right before bed and still get some gameplay in. So I can't speak to visually how it looks, you know, when it's on a monitor and it's docked. So that's just something to consider, as I played mainly in tablet mode, and that is by far my favorite way to play my Switch. But yeah, I think with Metroid Prime 4 Beyond, kind of what I wanted to do was set the table and then kind of dive into it and just give my opinion. So this might be a bit of a shorter one. I believe I did a podcast on Metroid Prime Remastered, so, and the Metroid series is an interesting one, so I think it's important to talk about that, talk about the Metroid Prime legacy and where we're at, and obviously jump into speaking about Metroid Prime 4. Now, the Metroid series, one of Nintendo's oldest series, came out around the time of Mario and Zelda. And it's really cool playing the original Metroid. I think the design of Samus looks cool. The Morph Ball's in there, and it's really cool seeing like most of her powers. What blows my mind is, you know, 35 years later, most of the core ideas for some of these just super classic intellectual properties, or, you know, franchises, are the same. Mario still looks pretty much the same, runs and jumps. Zelda has swords and puzzle solving and dungeons and adventure. And, you know, Metroid has, you know, the Morph Ball, missiles, shooting, like, Samus's character looks cool. It's science fiction. Like, it's just very impressive seeing that. And for whatever reason, when you look at the Metroid series, Nintendo has seen just a massive, massive takeoff in recent years on some of their franchises. And, you know, Mario's always sold well. Zelda's always sold well. Metroid, not so much the same. The highest selling Metroid game is Metroid Dread, which came out, like, what, a couple of years ago? So it was a 2D Metroid game, and great game. Different, Fusion, the original Metroid remake that was on the Game Boy Advance, Metroid Fusion, and Super Metroid, those are just perfect games. I love all three of them in terms of the 2D Metroid. But you look at the sales of the franchise, and for me, it's hard to call them the big three anymore. You know, it used to be like, hey, these three, because, you know, Zelda and Metroid would kind of cater to the more hardcore crowd, and Mario can be played by everybody. You know, the hardcore crowd can play it, the, you know, kids can play it, family can play it. But with Metroid, I really do struggle with why Zelda is as successful as it is now, but Metroid hasn't followed suit. So I think Metroid Dread is the best-selling Metroid game. It sold 4 million copies, and like that kind of just blows my mind, because it feels like game sales have just ballooned for Nintendo in the last, like, you know, we'll just say the Switch's life cycle. So these numbers are kind of off the top of my head, so they might not be perfectly accurate, but, you know, Breath of the Wild sold over 30 million copies, I'm pretty sure, and Tears of the Kingdom sold over 20 million, and that's not counting the Switch 2 versions just yet. I don't think that, but Nintendo's going to have a quarterly, and you know what, I might do a podcast for that, but Nintendo's going to have a quarterly thing where they release all of their sales, because we don't have the Metroid Prime 4 sales either. We get little snippets of, like, the physical sales in Japan only, which is almost a useless figure to even consider. You know, there's such a push for digital, and it's never sold well in Japan. The UK market is just like a grain of rice, you know, in a silo of rice compared to the North American market. So until we get those North American numbers and those digital numbers, we're really not going to know how successful this game was, but it was across two systems technically. And so, okay, you look at 4 million copies sold and you look at 30 million for Breath of the Wild. So in the comparison to Breath of the Wild is going to be important here in a second, because Metroid Prime 4's development cycle, I think, has partially led to the final product that we got. So you already kind of have a series, which I could not tell you why people don't buy it. Maybe, I don't know. I feel like Zelda's always been popular and maybe more accessible, but when I look at Metroid, I'm like, it looks cool. I feel like it can appeal to a lot of people, but I'm not sure. Like, I really wish I could pull analytics, like, from Nintendo, shoot them an email and be like, hey, what are the demographics buying these games? And, like, what do you see that is, like, keeping the sales slow? Because I really do think, like, some of the Metroid games should have just sold gangbusters, and maybe I'll be completely surprised, because honestly, with the Switch sales, when I look through the top, like, 20 Switch games in terms of sales numbers, I was completely shocked. Like, Splatoon 3 was, like, 20-plus million copies. Like, a random Mario Party I've never played was, like, 15 million. I was like, what? Both Pokemons sold, like, 20-plus million copies. So it's kind of crazy out there. And then you see Metroid Dread, which a lot of people were very happy with, so sells 4 million copies, and it's the highest selling Metroid game. So it's like, geez Louise. I think I read a few things saying that due to Metroid Prime 4's development cycle, that they're going to have to sell, you know, like a little over 2 million copies to kind of recoup and make it a success. And I do get scared, because Nintendo has stopped making games in popular franchises. They if you look through all of the franchise ownership that Nintendo has and just, like, list them off that are unique, it's absolutely jarring that they have that many IPs. And, like, I didn't realize some of the stuff. And so I played Smash Brothers Melee on the GameCube, and they have like the you can get those like little trophies and like read about their old games. And there's games that like never came to America, games I've never heard of, like just craziness. So setting the table, Metroid already doesn't sell well in comparison to how popular Nintendo's other franchises have become. Like even Kirby selling like 10 million copies. It's just like complete craziness now. So the game needs to sell well because it was in development for like 9 years, eight or nine years, which is crazy. So the game got acknowledged and announced. Everybody goes crazy. 2 years later, so a few years into the development cycle, I think Bandai Namco was making it originally, which is very interesting. And they've partnered with Nintendo on a few other franchises. Sadly, I think they've also partnered with Star Fox, and that has not gone well. So it would... I trust Retro, but Retro has gone through so much turnover and change that they're, like... It's not the same company that made Metroid Prime 1. So the Prime series is unique. That Metroid Prime, the original one, is one of the highest rated and like just appreciated games ever. Like, so I played Metroid Prime Remastered recently, and my only real knock on it is there's a couple things, but it's when you play it, these things like you just don't think about. So the first is you would go through, you know, going through areas again, because the way the game is designed is it's so dense. Every room that you go into, there's like 50 possibilities. It's all interconnected as well, which is fascinating. So it really took the Metroid exploration and just took it into the 3D space perfectly. But... oh, where was I going with that? I'm having a brain fart here. Okay, so some of the like Chozo ghosts, for example, later on, you know, appearing, they're very aggressive and kind of, I don't want to say annoying enemies, but they reappear as you go through. So that's kind of like a old school Metroid thing. Like if you went through an area and kill it, like enemies just keep respawning. And there's, I think, four different visors and four different weapon types. Beams, and then you have like missiles and stuff like that. So Nintendo really did design that to work on the GameCube controller, and I think that's the way that you need to play it. So Nintendo has this habit of just taking their own hardware and designing the game at the time perfectly on that hardware and controller. So out of all the games, especially like in the 3D era of Nintendo, so 64, GameCube, Wii, you know, Wii U, it is freaking impossible to just emulate and play it well. Now, you can say, oh, but, you know, Big Read, emulators are so awesome and cool now. They're the greatest thing ever. And I'm like, okay, I see what you're saying. But, you know, the way they designed, you know, Super Mario Galaxy doesn't transition perfectly. Metroid Prime, Super Smash Bros. Melee... listen, anybody who plays Super Smash Brothers not on a GameCube controller is a crazy person. Don't believe anything they say. So Metroid Prime, I feel like, was designed perfectly for that. And, you know, that little C-stick, that little second analog stick, you know, just kind of flicking that matched really well, where it wasn't as... it didn't feel as good control-wise. So especially, like, you know, as you approach the final boss of the game where... or you go into an area where you're going to be switching between visors quickly and switching between beams quickly. It worked on the Switch, but it was definitely a drawback. I would have preferred to have played it on just the GameCube controller. So outside of those two things, what Metroid Prime does well that makes it arguably one of the greatest games ever, if I was talking to somebody... and even though, like, I might believe a different game is better, and they said, oh, Metroid Prime is one of my favorite games, I'd be like, oh, I can't knock that. Like, it's phenomenal. So it's on a very short list, in my opinion, of what people could consider the greatest game ever made. Now, you sometimes on these lists, too, you have to or I shouldn't say you have to, but I will notice that people will make a top 100 list, but they can only select one game per franchise. And I'm like, listen, you're going to kind of have to understand that, you know, a top 10 might have a lot of Zeldas and Marios in it. Or I think I remember, you know, top 100 games of all time, and number one was like Super Mario. And I get it. But saying that, you're giving a lot to the legacy there. Super Mario Brothers 3. So Super Mario Brothers 2 was kind of like a weird not Mario game that they just kind of smacked, you know, the Mario skin on. But Super Mario Brothers 3, god dang, that's like one, might be my favorite Mario, might be the best platformer ever, and might be one of my favorite games of all time. It's just like they took the jump mechanics and made them perfect. And just there's so much exploration, like there's secrets, like it's just a crazy game. And you compare it to one, and it is very clearly better. So it's not necessarily like a preference, but it's like, you know, they had to create the template. So saying all of that, with Metroid Prime 1, they had to take the Metroid series and make it 3D. And I remember seeing early pictures where they, I believe, development might have either started when the GameCube was called the Dolphin, so they had early access, or it started on the 64. I had an old Nintendo Power somewhere during the 64 time frame. I think it was before the launch of the GameCube that had this grainy, like, looking picture of Metroid Prime and what it came to be, but it definitely looked like it was in between, like, the 64 and the GameCube. Like, it didn't look like the finished product. So, and they made it first person, which is crazy. So you got to think about this, you know, Metroid was always a 2D action platformer exploration. Like every time you find a new item, it unlocks areas. So you kind of like retread through and all these different power-ups that allow you to explore more. They made it first person and, you know, it's in a 3D space and it's kind of like a shooter. So how do you bring that isolated loner feeling with exploration, alien planets, sci-fi? How do you bring that to a complete revamp of the series? And I do believe in luck. Now, I don't believe in terms of like business and development, and, you know, kind of reminds me of the original Star Wars. Like sometimes there is luck just with the timing of things, right place, right time. And I think things just kind of fell into place perfectly because they captured the spirit of the Metroid series and somehow transitioned it well, but it was more of like a first-person adventure game as opposed to a first-person shooter. So it didn't have to, you know, follow the mechanics of the first-person shooters that were getting like really popular during that era and even more popular in the next generation of consoles. And, you know, they were already popular on PCs. So it was kind of different, right? But the exploration remained the same. Now, the second thing that they did extremely, extremely well was the exploration piece and how dense. I mean, literally, as soon as you get out of where you land the ship and you get in the first, I think it's like the Chozo Ruins or whatever. So it's like kind of like the first area a little bit. But you go in there and there are like six doors. You're already seeing missile packs. Like you're seeing things you can't access yet. And like you get the morph ball boost and then you come back and then you can find. It's so dense. So you're just literally exploring and scanning everything. Like they did such a good job with the scanning. And I kind of understand that that's kind of a boring mechanic, I think. Let me try to explain that. So in the Prime series, you scan your environment and you get little like codex entries and things you read. And that's basically how the lore and the story is kind of told. Samus doesn't talk. Samus should not talk. We do not need to make Samus talk. There should be almost no talking in the Metroid series. Like it doesn't need to happen. You can tell the story through data entries And having replayed Metroid Prime about a little over a year ago, it still works. Doesn't need to change. You don't need to add talking. Every time they have tried to add talking into these games, it just like does not function. For some reason, you know, it can work with Mario. Now, Mario talking is super surface level and silly. The newer Zelda games, it functions really well, but, you know, Link's not really talking, or it's implied that he's talking. But, you know, any of the 3D era games, you can just, they're telling you the story around you. And the cool thing about Link is he just goes and, you know, he's 5'5" and just goes and saves the day. Samus doesn't need to talk. They took a female character. Nobody knew she was a female because they put her in a cool space suit. She's very cool. I don't want to swear on the podcast, but she kicks butt. She takes names. She's very competent. She gets the job done. Like, there's no challenge she can't face. Like, she's, you know, the hero. She's basically, she's a bounty hunter, which is like very, very cool. But essentially, that character, it doesn't need to talk. And for Nintendo at this point to add dialogue and talking, I don't know how they would ever pull it off. I could tolerate, or I think the fans could tolerate Fusion. There was a lot of internal dialogue. So, like, you could read through, like, you know, there'd be, like, lettering, and she'd be, like, it's from her perspective, and she's speaking about, like, you know, the things that are happening and everything. And that functioned. But I just don't know how you add dialogue into these games. And that was one of the big benefits of one, is it was so atmospheric. Like, the soundtrack for Prime 1 is stellar. It's a 10 out of 10. Like, they did it perfect. You can hear a song and probably describe the theme of the area. I actually did that with my wife. I started playing a song, and it has the dum, dum, boom, dum, dum. And I'm like, what does this sound like? And she's like, fire. And I was like, great, because that's the magma runes or whatever the heck they're called in Prime 1. I was like, that's like, it sounds like that. It feels like that. Mechanical. Like, you know what I mean? It sounds like a manufacturing plant of, and there's, you're all, that's basically like what you're around. So the atmospheric feeling isolated, like Samus has to accomplish this task in Prime 1 on her own. There's not really a saving grace. Like, it's like, this is survival mode, and you also get to kind of figure out, and the game's kind of difficult too. Some of the boss battles freaking kicked my butt. Not really, like, if you were to rate it strictly as an action game and not the complete package and like just the shooting, you'd be like, oh, this is probably a little clunky. And that's kind of how I felt still, like, at the time that I played it and my most recent playthrough, that's how I felt. But it doesn't feel like it's that type of game anyway. You know what I mean? It's definitely, there's a significant amount of action elements, but it doesn't feel like a God of War or a Devil May Cry or, you know, any type of those like beat 'em up games, or hack and slash, whatever you'd want to call them, where it's like has to be crisp. Elden Ring would be another one where it's like, you know, the combat is the most important thing, and it has to be like pretty much near perfect and fluid. Now, that's a whole other topic, because it's like, well, Dark Souls 2, you can't even like run and jump. It's like so clunky. Okay, so you take all of these things and you take the legacy of Metroid Prime. It's almost like a game that shouldn't have existed, because it was such a drastic change to the series, and it transitioned very well. You had Metroid Prime 2, also on the GameCube. Have it played the beginning, but didn't have a copy at the time. I rented it or borrowed it or something. So I beat 1, but I never beat 2, I don't think. I do have it, though. I've been considering just hooking up the GameCube and taking like 15 hours just to knock it out. Metroid Prime 3, I did beat, but I only completed it one time on the Wii back in the day, like 2008 or 9 or whatever the heck it came out. It's so weird. Like, I beat that game, and I feel like if I looked back and watched some gameplay of it, I would remember it, but I don't remember a lot about it. But the one thing that I do remember was, using your grapple beam to travel on these like rails. So you'd like go flying through the sky, and there was like different, like it was all interconnected, but Okay, so last thing I'll say, because everybody's comparing it to the original Metroid Prime. That's the gold standard. That's the most popular one. That's basically what everyone wanted, was just another one of those, or just to pull that magic out of it. Okay, so how interconnected and interwoven everything is. Like, whoever designed the map of Metroid Prime, I know it was like a whole team, but whoever had that idea of like, yo, like they need a gold star, because it's like, you're just sitting there exploring. Like, I didn't try to look anything up when I replayed it. I was just like, I'm just going to, okay, looks like there's a weird little area down here I can kind of get to. Let's try to get to it. Oh, I can't get to it. Let's start scanning and just try to, you know, figure it out. But you take a look at all the good things of Metroid Prime, the legacy, the expectations. Now let's go to Metroid Prime 4. Weird development cycle. Bandai Namco developing it out of the blue. Nintendo has like a press conference in 2020 or 2019, whenever it was, to basically say, hey, it's going to retro. It's like, ooh, the developers, the original developers, but now, you know, it's going to be a different company. It's been 25 years. So, okay, that's intriguing and interesting. But from everything I'm reading, it sounds like they weren't ready to make this game. It sounds like it was like they were making something else, which is going to be interesting. I want to know what they're making. Were they making another Donkey Kong, 2D Donkey Kong? I don't know. So they're given this game. And it sounds like, honestly, it sounds like there was a lot made. And it sounded like they were going to have to kind of build upon something that was maybe not functional or kind of not going well. So you already have a kind of a rocky foundation, and it sounded like they couldn't completely scrap it. Now, I need to read more into this, but Nintendo, and I want to know who from Nintendo, because sometimes you get in your own, so I always quote this, but it's like, when you make a game for everyone, you make it for no one. Like, you have to make the game that you're trying to make. Japanese developers went through this during the Gen 7 of consoles, where like they just dropped off a ledge. Western developers were just kind of carrying everything, and Japanese developers from the previous generations till then, it was like a significant drop off in competent development and high quality games for like years. It was just one of the craziest things I've ever seen. So I'm like, hey, 90% of the games and developers that I like come from Japanese developers, and now it's 90% are Western developers, and all my favorite games are like open world. So not every game has to be open world, and you're going to kind of learn that about Metroid Prime 4. Breath of the Wild came out in 2017 and was just huge for the Zelda series. A lot of people liked it. I have my own opinions on it. There was good, there was bad. But I don't think you need open world in Metroid Prime. And it sounds like it was like, you know, Nintendo was coming at it from a perspective of, hey, look how many of our games were opening the worlds and it's working. But guess what? If you're going to make an open world game and you're handed a base and you don't know how much you're, like, that's not going to happen quickly. And allegedly, as the development went on, and it was very clear that, you know, it was not working, but it was too far to change it. Like, they can't go back to Nintendo and say, hey, we got to scrap it again and start development a third time. Nintendo's going to be like, then the game will never come out. We might never have Metroid again. Like, that can't happen. So eventually, like, the product can't be a complete financial loss. Like, it has to come out, and you've gone too far where you can't fix this. And it really, playing Metroid Prime 4, that is the best way I can describe it. It feels like they introduced an open world element, and they compromised with Nintendo to do so. So I'm going to start talking about like how Metroid Prime 4 plays, what to expect. But it feels like a game that introduced a few concepts that got too far in development, and they knew it wasn't going to be good, but they had to continue and had to do what they could. So Metroid Prime 4 has like four or five zones, and there's a big desert in the center that connects them. The big desert in the center is just vast and mostly empty. Excuse me. So you have this big, vast desert that you don't want to be in. Okay, so got this big open desert, not a lot going on in there, and it's interconnecting kind of, you know, four or five zones. Now, I believe the compromise with Nintendo, as this was, the open world was not going well for the game development, it sounded like, was, hey, you know, we have this open desert and we're not going to do like a full open world. So we're going to give Samus a cool looking motorcycle sci-fi thing to ride around on. And it's like the Viola, and that's going to be kind of the compromise here. So yeah, it's kind of open world. So I can give credit to the motorcycle that driving it around is not bad. It doesn't feel bad. You can shoot from it. You can fight enemies from it and everything. So from that perspective, like, I don't hate it. Like, there is fun in driving around on something in video games. It's just kind of, like, if you can get inside of a car in, you know, pretty much any open world game and drive around, it's like, okay, this is fun. Like, there's a level. It's like running and jumping like a character, you know what I mean? So there's that. But you're literally just killing time when you need to go between zones. So with this giant desert in the center, it would have been really cool to shrink or eliminate that and connect all the zones, kind of like in Prime 1. And, you know, maybe even in the center have a separate zone, not a giant, vast, dead desert land that... Okay, I'm going to throw something out there, because I've been thinking about this. I remember when I was a lot younger, and I played Ocarina of Time, and you get to the end, and you get to Ganon's tower, and you basically have to go through the five different temples, but it's, like, really short. So you go through, you complete something, and it... you know, takes this energy and unlocks the door to go fight Ganondorf, right? But each little area, door that you go into, there's one that represents the forest temple, there's one that represents the water temple, and it's kind of like a little puzzle snapshot representing that chunk of the game. And I remember as a kid thinking, like, this would be awesome if you walked into a giant, like, Ganon's tower, and the entire Zelda game took place in there with all these, like, different areas kind of combined. That would have been cool. So some type of, like, centralized zone that held it all together but gave it a reason to kind of go back through there to get to the other zones. Or you shrink and eliminate. The problem with shrinking and eliminating is all of the zones, like... are pretty straightforward. And I'm going to give you a great example. So when people say, oh, it's a straight line, that doesn't necessarily equate to something bad. So I'm going to give a few examples, and then I'll give a few bad examples. So you compare it to Metroid Prime 1, which was unbelievably dense. And every area had 50 things to do, and the maps were just, like, interconnected in such a cool way. So you kind of have that as the backbone of the positive. So when somebody says, oh, this is a straight line, you know, this is linear. Linear is the word I'm looking for. This is linear. It's linear. It's bad. It's bad. Linear game design and linear gameplay is not bad. Mario games are linear, like the old 2D games, right? You go from left to right. Well, guess what? You're doing all kinds of awesome, fun stuff in there, and going from left to right is very fun, and there's powers, and there's all kinds of stuff to break it up. I'll give a more modern example in comparison. Final Fantasy X is a linear game, but nobody complained that it was linear like Final Fantasy XIII. And it was kind of funny, like Final Fantasy 13 came out, and I've done podcasts on this already, so I don't need to beat a dead horse. But it had, right before it launched in North America, people were uploading images of all the maps, and all the maps are basically just a straight corridor. And I'm like, that's not necessarily bad, because Final Fantasy X was like that. You had a little map thing, and it was like, here's this red arrow, go here. But all of the gameplay, the leveling system, the sphere grid was so cool. All of the characters, the story, like getting to that point was incredible. You know what I mean? Then there's like an open world area where you can go fight monsters and all this stuff. But it was like, okay, going from point A to point B is a blast. Two games later, it is not a blast because of going from point A to point B is not fun. The characters suck, and you know, the locked your leveling system, which is still the dumbest thing. I think people forget that now. But it's like, that's still one of the most bizarre things. I mean, it naturally is locked in old Final Fantasy games because, like, you know, enemy, you require more experience as you level. But it's just such a weird system. The whole thing is weird. So linearity is not a bad thing. It is a bad thing in Metroid Prime 4 because you have this vast desert that you got to ride this cool motorcycle on that just feels kind of like pointless. And when you go into the areas, there's not much to them. Honestly, like, I'm surprised the game took, like, I think it took me 15 or 16 hours to beat. And like, I'm really thinking about it. I'm like, the game feels so small. Like, I can remember the different zones and the different items and, like, just noticeable parts of the game in the original Metroid Prime that, like, stood out to me. And I'm like, oh, yeah, you do this. Oh, yeah, you fight this person. Oh, yeah, this was awesome. Oh, you know. I'm looking back on Metroid Prime 4, and I just played it recently. Like, I'm thinking I'm going to need to, like, play it again. I'm just like, I can't, like, remember much. The one, oh, man. Okay. It starts off, and part of me was like, this is kind of cool seeing the Galactic Federation, like, operate from an organizational and, like, war standpoint. You know, like, all of the soldiers just have really cool suits, different items. They're, you know, piloting these giant mechs and just like fighting and killing stuff. And you're thrown into a boss battle really early on, which I think was a good idea. They did that in the original. I still think it's a good idea to get used to the mechanics. And, you know, there's one mechanic in particular we'll talk about here shortly. But there was too much talking. I don't want to hear anybody talk. But it was interesting to kind of see the Galactic Federation. And then once you get out of that starting zone and you get to the first, it might have been the first zone. I think it's when, like, you guys crash land on the planet. Okay, you're all down there. And you go through, like, the, it's, like, wooded. So I forget what the people are called, the fake Chozo. But it's, like, they're kind of, like, you know, shrine. And it's all, it's, like, forested slash jungle. And the one thing that I will say is in that area, like as you're walking through it, the magic is there very briefly, but it is there. And I'm like scanning stuff. I'm walking through. There's like a teeny little bit of minor exploration, like before you kind of realize everything's a straight line and there's not really that much exploration. But I'm like, ah, I see the Metroid magic. This is very nice. I think the game looks amazing too. And I know that's, graphically, I'm like 10 years behind on what everyone else is doing. So it's really funny for me. I have a PS5. I've barely played it, but it is really funny to like see a modern, you know, like Elden Ring or one of the newer Resident Evils, you know, at like a super high frame rate and graphical fidelity. Like I watched somebody be streaming it, you know, from PC or PS5. And I'm like, okay, this looks pretty darn good. Like there's like so much to it. But Metroid Prime 4 looks really good. I really liked the art style. I really liked how everything looked. I felt like this is a nice little showcase of what Nintendo will be able to do graphically going forward as they start shifting development to the Switch 2 hardware. Like, I think in a, you know, in another year when we're starting to see games built from the ground up on the Switch 2, I think you're going to see a lot of good things. Because you have to remember, Metroid Prime 4 is a Switch game. Like, ultimately, it's a Switch game, and, you know, they were able to enhance it later for the Switch 2. But graphically, stylistically, I enjoy how the game looks. I like how the suit looks. Like, I like it. The Federation, I think, is cool. Even the faces, if they weren't talking, I don't think they looked bad. CGI faces and faces in video games still kind of, I'm like, but it's like, it is what it is. Like, they still look like potatoes to me, but whatever. But the issue is you get pulled out of that magic very quickly. And you get pulled out of, you know, you get pulled down to the reality of what Metroid Prime 4 actually is. So Metroid Prime 4 is hanging out at about 78% on Metacritic. You know, the original Metroid Prime got so many 10 out of 10s. And you just compare the two, and you're very clearly dealing with a different product. You are dealing with, like, something that feels like, you know, a 70% game. But it's not balanced. It's averaged out. Because, like, that feel, sometimes I feel like this game is awesome. But then you immediately go into, this is a terrible experience, and I don't want to be doing this. And part of it is from, you know, being a Metroid Prime fan, and having played 2D Metroid games and having played the Prime series and everything like that, and playing Metroid Dread, that your expectations, justifiably so, are high. When you are playing a franchise known for quality that has been around for 35 years, you're gonna have expectations. You can't get around it. Nintendo as a company can't come out and say, "Oh, lower your expectations, everybody." Like, sorry, Metroid just kind of stinks, and that's just how it's gonna be. So, saying that, it's the average that it gets dragged down. Because there's times where I'm playing it where I'm like, "This is a really good game. I'm enjoying it." It's like, you know, probably not a 10 out of 10, but it's like a 9 out of 10. Like, you're feeling that Metroid Prime magic. Then you go out into the desert, or then one of the characters starts talking. So, I want to say, excuse me, there are, what, 1, 2, 3, or 4, however many there are, NPCs that talk. Now, thank God Retro stood fast and was just like, "We're not making Samus talk in this one. We're not doing the Metroid Other M." People forget about Metroid Other M. That game is a dumpster fire. That would be, I'd have to replay it to do a podcast on it, but good God, it's just depressing. We try to pretend it doesn't exist. So technically, I guess Metroid Prime 4 might be the worst game of the series. If you take Other M out. So if that was the bottom, that's pretty good. But Metroid Other M was just stop talking. Like, and in this, they tried to make the NPCs not annoying. I think they actually came out in a statement or an interview or whatever and said that they tried. But it's like, so they're talking to Samus. Samus isn't responding. They're talking too much in general, but they're also talking too much to not have dialogue. So, I don't know. It can't happen going forward. I don't think they're capable of adding dialogue. The only way I would ever see it working, I don't. But if the chips are down and it's like, "Yo, Big Reed, you have to find a way to implement talking in the Prime series," the only thing I can think of is like a Mass Effect type style where you just go full into proper dialogue, super well written, like Because most of, like, I don't care about Shepard talking. You know what I mean? Like, he says things, or she, however you played your character. But it's like, all of your story and your lore. Like, Mass Effect 2 is my favorite out of the series because of how well they handled the character-to-character dialogue. And, like, you can talk to a character and, you know, I'll spend 20 minutes just listening to them talk and asking them all these questions. But that doesn't work for the Metroid gameplay. So you kind of hit a roadblock right there where I just don't think right now it can be implemented. I don't think Nintendo can pull it off. I don't think Retro can pull it off unless you just fully focus on high quality dialogue. And the reason I picked Mass Effect is because you have, you know, similar, you know, like suits and everything like that. It's in space. There's alien races in the dialogue. Like, one of the reasons why you play it is for the story, the dialogue, the talking. Like, I think I have 8 full 100% playthroughs of Mass Effect 2, and I listen to the dialogue every time. Like, I don't skip past anything because I enjoy it. Like, I like the story. I like the dialogue. I think the only way to implement it into Metroid is to make it that quality, or don't put it in at all, because you get pulled down to, hey, this game's not a good game, frankly, as soon as the characters start talking. So you're kind of introduced, you know, I think it's like Miles is his name. So you're introduced into this, you know, super, it's an old trope that I don't see too much. I've never met anybody that works like this, but it's like, oh my gosh, I'm trying to think of his name from Metal Gear Solid 2. But anyway, the bumbling scientist. So he's technically a Galactic Federation soldier, but he's really good from like a technical perspective. So he's the one where when you find, you know, a new power up, you bring it to him and he turns it into a weapon for you and gives it to you. And he's the one repairing the giant, you know, mech that you need to progress through the game. So he's like your technical expert. He technically has a pistol, you know, because he is a soldier. But it's just like interacting with him is infuriating. And he's probably, I don't know if he's the worst one. Man, like the more you think of it, it's just like I don't like any of these characters. I think there's 4 NPCs, if I remember correctly. But Miles, annoying, like just bumbling, dropping everything, like, Samus, I believe I can do this, and, I dropped my pistol, thank you for really saving me there. Like, I've never met that person in real life. Like, these are stereotypes that exist in, like, bad action movies, like, not even the good ones, like, bad ones or bad games of, you know, bad books, like, you know, then you have the Samus superfan character. I don't even remember the rest of their names, to be honest, but you have the Samus super fan where she's like, oh my god, Samus, you're so cool. She's like, you know, fangirling out, and I don't know. Then you have like the tough Sarge, you know, I'm gonna fight and I'm cool, and we're gonna go execute the mission. All right, Samus, we're gonna do this. And it's like, okay, you're cool, I get it. Like, we're trying to make you cool and, you know, kick butt, and you're gonna go do all this stuff. And then you have like the lone wolf sniper guy who just I don't know, because then he has sections where out on the desert you find him, you actually need to find him because he gives you something to progress the plot. So you're just like this part of the game, I'm just like remembering it, I'm just like, this stinks. But like, you know, like he'll go out there camping and then he starts telling you stories about his past and you're just like, man, like, why are we talking? I don't know. So I know I'm spending so much time here, but honestly, if like you're going to play the game, it's going to come, you're going to start hitting these characters, like running into them and talking to them and just be like, I don't want this to happen. And there's even sections where like the exploration, it's like, okay, I know I need to go somewhere, but it doesn't make sense as to where you're supposed to go. Prime 1 was absolutely legendary where like, if you get something new, you probably have at least one idea as to where to go next. And eventually, as you're like, you know, looking around and exploring the game, will be like, hey, we got a disturbance, you know, we got a magma disturbance here. Come check this out. And it leads you to a boss fight or the next zone that you're supposed to go to. But it's just like, you know, you get the double jump, you kind of know where you can go. You get the ice beam, you know, or you can go. You get the plasma beam, you know, you get the missile. You start, or you get the morph ball, you get the speed boost. Like, you start realizing in Prime 1 probably where you need to be going. And it's like a feeling of like, aha, where in this, it just doesn't make sense. Like, I was talking, you know, I was like texting with my friend just about the game, and most of it was like, oh my gosh, why are they still talking? But, you know, it'd be like, okay, I'm here doing X. It feels like I should go here. And it's like, haha, no. Like, you got to go somewhere that actually doesn't make sense. And eventually Miles will come down and, you know, say something generic or like, hey, why don't you check other areas you haven't explored before? And it's like, well, I am. And that's not the right spot. It's like, it's just, man, it's just rough. So I feel bad because I didn't expect, you know, the latter half of this podcast to be negative, but I think it, Let me kind of summarize, because I think this is important. And whenever, so I actually really love when companies release their financials. It's funny looking back, I have always been interested in the business and sales side of the game markets. Like, I used to look at the weekly numbers, sales numbers every single week. You know, I would log into like GameFAQs or whatever, and I would look at how the Japanese sales were looking for each game. And I love it. And I think it's a critical part of the history of our hobby, because video games are art, in my opinion, but they are also a product. A product that you will have to market, complete, put a bow on, and sell to customers. So it is art, but it's unique in the sense where it's a creation that is designed to be mass produced and sold. And I think gamers sometimes are a little sensitive to that, where it's like, you know, you have a painting. It's a one of one pretty much every time. You know what I mean? So it's not art in that sense, where it's like, okay, here's this one thing. We should never change it. Here it is. It's something ultimately that it's artistic, but Nintendo is probably going to have to sell 2.5 million copies to make this a success. So I think sometimes that's kind of hard for our community to accept. That if games don't sell well, we don't get any more of them. So if a game comes out and fails, but it's like a 10 out of 10 and absolutely amazing, which has happened, honestly, like a bunch. Like, there are games that were incredible that, you know, weren't, you know, blowing the doors off in terms of sales. So sometimes that's a hard pill to swallow, because when you're creating something, and I'll repeat it, when you've made something for everyone, you've made it for no one. So if the story of them having, you know, getting early pressure in 2017 to make this an open world game, then you start going a few years into the development cycle and you're like, hey, this isn't working. Like, what do we do? Like, very clearly, the bike idea, if that was the compromise, didn't work. So whoever came up with the idea of the talking, and this needs to be open world, needs to be away from the creation process of this series. Saying all of that, I am happy that we got Metroid Prime 4 Beyond. I am happy that it came to fruition. I am happy that it exists. I would rather have this and have a shot at Metroid Prime 5 than to not have received a Metroid Prime 4. Because frankly, I don't know what that would have meant for the series. I think out of all of Nintendo's franchises, I personally feel that Star Fox was the, you know, most successful early franchise that I'm shocked is not popular I feel like all the furry people would be like all over this. I think I like Fox McCloud. So, you know, the main character of Star Fox, I like him. I like the characters, but I think he's marketable. I think he's cool. And, you know, they say, hey, with that franchise in particular, keep him in the, you know, keep him in the R-Wing or whatever his little ship is called. But I could really also see a world, now they haven't executed on it, where he gets out of it. Like, I could see a Star Fox game modernizing and blending things together in existing. But guess what? I don't think you're going to see another Star Fox game. Not a mainline one. I feel like Nintendo has tried. I mean, at least we got a remake of Star Fox 64 on the 3DS. I'd be very curious. It might be nice to do a little retrospective on the Star Fox series. But I guess my point with that is if Metroid Prime 4 Beyond took 8 years and ultimately they decided to just scrap it because it was not coming together and wasn't going to meet the quality guidelines that Nintendo was expecting. It's a well-made game. It's very functional. It is quality. Like, it is a well-made game. It's just not as good as Metroid Prime 1. But, okay. So, to summarize, because I think I want to end on this point. I bought it as soon as I could. I played it. There's a lot of parts that I liked about it. And the parts that are very bad for the series and don't meet the expectations as to what the Metroid Prime series can be. I am extremely hopeful and curious. My fingers are crossed that when Nintendo comes out with their, you know, quarterly, we are going to see the Switch 2 sales numbers. So I love their financial statement that they release on their Japanese website, because they show the total sales of all their games and all their consoles. Like, man, it is great. I love that little snapshot. And it comes directly from them. Used to not be like that. So I'm like, yeah, this is good. I want to see how well the Switch 2 is selling in its first 6 months. And I want to see the Metroid Prime 4 sales. I think that number is going to really dictate where the series goes. But saying that, if they would have scrapped the game in 7 or 8 years of development time and just never released the product, I think that could have been the end of the Metroid series. It was awesome that Dread sold 4 million copies. That is absolutely huge. But I feel like 2D and 3D can exist for Nintendo's three big franchises. I consider them the big three, but honestly, like, Metroid's probably, it's not one anymore, honestly. Kirby might be the replacement, I don't know. But I think it can exist in the 2D space and the 3D space. You could make a 2D Zelda and I would buy it and like it. Or you can remake the old 2D games like they just did with Link's Awakening. Played it, loved it. And I can play Tears of the Kingdom, a 3D Zelda, play it and love it. I don't want to give up 2D Metroid because I think those, first of all, in the past decade, the 2D Metroidvania games have gotten huge, and, you know, Metroid like that's what they're basing those games off of, is the Metroid series. So I'm happy that it came out. I'm hopeful that it sold well enough for them to consider a Metroid Prime 5 and for maybe Retro to make it in conjunction with one of the main Nintendo development teams that normally works on, like, Mario and Zelda. I think that would be good because I know they outsourced some stuff for Metroid Prime 4. But I'm happy that it came out. I'm hopeful that the sales are good enough to justify Metroid Prime 5 built and designed correctly with fan feedback from 4. Because honestly, if we wouldn't have gotten it and they would have had to have scrapped it, I don't know if they would have continued with the Metroid series. And you look at the gap between 3 and 4 and it's like, you know, 20 years. So that's scary. that's, you know, that's a long time frame to not have another entry. So I'm hopeful that it has sold well. Do I think it is a game worth playing? Yes. I think you should play it. So if you're a fan of the Metroid series, I still think you should give a crack at it. I think it's a nice little title for Nintendo to market, you know, with the Switch 2 and everything like that, and have that hyped up of like, hey, it's finally here. Like, still hype it up and, you know, try to continue to get that second life out of it. Nintendo, their games sell consistently well through the life cycle of the game. You know, Breath of the Wild still continues to sell with the Switch 2 and the upgrade packs and everything like that. So I'm hoping that they can get some extra legs on it, and maybe, you know, it sells 20 or 30,000 copies every single month for the next however many years. That would be awesome. So I think it's important too that when you play games that you are able to kind of formulate your own opinions. I think reviews are good, but I do not think they're important. And I've kind of, I don't really follow like the big reviewers anymore. It's not like that. And that led to, that would be another fun podcast, is just how crazy it kind of got with reviews. That would be a fun one to talk about. We did it a little bit. But there's a few other stories where, like, essentially publishers were threatening to blacklist reviewers. And I don't think that power is there anymore, just because the internet's so huge. I mean, I kind of have found some smaller, you know, review companies or news companies that kind of cater towards, you know, games that I like or platforms that I like. So it's not a death knell anymore to get a 78%, but it's definitely not good. And it doesn't live up to the legacy of Metroid Prime. And I think that's the biggest thing, is like, the Metroid Prime magic is in the game, but it's fleeting. So ultimately, I am happy that it has come out. I'm hopeful. Sales are good. We get a Metroid Prime 5. But it does not live up to the Metroid Prime name. And it does not compare to Remastered. So personally, what I think Nintendo should do next is remaster and release Prime 2 and Prime 3. Let's go. I think the Metroid Prime 1 remaster sold over 1 million copies, so I think that's what they should do. But yeah, that kind of wraps up this podcast. This is another episode of Gaming's Lost Memories with Big Reed. And yeah, leave a review if you like it. I believe I have my email on file. You can always email about like games you would like me to cover or topics you would like me to cover. But thank you guys for listening.